Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dedicated to Henry Foreman. In the year of the primal form, the dawn of terrestrial birth, man mastered the mammoth and horse. Man was the lord of the earth. He made him an hollow skin from the heart of an early tree. He compassed the earth therein. Man was the lord of the sea. He controlled the vigorous steam. He harnessed the lightning for hire. He drove the celestial team. And man was the lord.
Well, 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 my friends, welcome to episode 68 of Agitators Anonymous. This is Alan Averill. Greetings from a rainy and grey Dublin. Normal service has been resumed, summer loaded for a couple of weeks, but now the system has failed and we are back to normal. Well, the new normal, whatever that may be. So, episode 68, what are we going to discuss? Well, I've had a couple of things written, quite a lot of things to say, quite a lot of things have happened over the last few weeks. You will notice over on the YouTube channel and with the podcast, I've sort of done a few things, just really nerding out about music, nerding out about metal. The talk with Danny Lilker from Nuclear Assault, SOD, etc., went down pretty well. And it's just total heavy metal nerd stuff. And also the second part of our Metal Salvage Chats, which is basically me and Joe from that Gamma Bomb. What sort of accent was that? Joe from Gamma Bomb just talking nerdy metal stuff and throwing stats at each other and trying to out-nerd each other, all things considered. So maybe go over to my YouTube channel and subscribe and take a look. Because it's fairly leveled out there with lots of different nonsense over lots of different context, not all political, not all whinging about this, that and the other. First things first though, some of you will have noticed that Primordial has announced a gig in London. It's called Resurgence Ritual, along with Sayer, Hellripper and Fenn. It's on Sunday the 29th of August in the Electric Ballroom in Camden in London by Aeon Promotions. And, you know, it's been quite strange. A lot of people have been messaging me about it, asking me how I feel. Isn't it good to be back to normal? Isn't it this, that, the other? And the truth is that I won't actually believe it's going to happen until the intro is rolling and I'm about to step on the stage. In the great words of Mr. Peter Steele, no hope, no fear, because of the way things have gone over the last 19, 20 months and the way that, let's be clear, music, art, social society has been treated, which is as if it has little or no importance. It would not surprise me that the rules between now, July the 20-somethingth, and August the 29th in 1 month arbitrarily change, and that whatever procedures we all have to, or hoops we have to jump through between now and then, change completely. And I don't know. The new, let's have a look around the room, the new Monster Energy Ultra variant will put paid to our aspirations for trying to hold some form of artistic or musical communion. Now, I know many of you are quite tired of hearing about lockdown, about all of those kind of things. And it is true. It is absolutely exhausting. It is tiresome to talk about. And it is also true that quite a few people have been messaging me going, oh, look, maybe a ray of light at the end of the tunnel that you've organized, you know, that this gig has been organized. Now, of course, if you've been listening to the podcast, you will know that I am a glass half empty kind of person. And so being angry about what's been taken from you doesn't mean you can be positive about one small thing that potentially has been organized that doesn't alleviate all of those things. Now, of course, maybe I should do a little bit more soul searching and a little bit more listening to the Stoics and try and find inner peace in relation to those things. Blah-de-blah-de-blah. Well, yes, London. So we have to see whether this can happen. Like I said, at the moment, Boris Johnson over in the Conservatives over in the UK are sort of forging along with opening to some degree. I'm quite how much this has to do with Brexit and Johnson's, I suppose, social, cultural saber rattling against the EU, against Merkel, all this kind of thing. It is quite strange that for the last 10 years, 20 years, we've been told constantly how we're part of a global marketplace. We're Europeans, we're pan-European, we're all these kind of things, that Ireland is a part of the EU, the structural funds of the EU, this, that and the other, etc., etc. But as you've heard me talk about in the podcast, then when it comes to actually looking at what some other countries in the EU are doing in relation to reopening society or allowing people to have some liberties and freedoms back, that does not compute. And Ireland goes its own way like it was 1955 and Archbishop McQuaid is telling Eamon de Valera quite what to do with the Irish population. So will this gig happen or not? It's hard to say. Certainly at the moment, London looks more of a better venue, let's say, than, for example, in September. Primordial is also supposed to play Prophecy Festival on the following day, the Barug, the very famous Barug in Rotterdam, Barug Open Air. But yet, as you may or may not have noticed, for example, in Holland, they just shut down the clubs and bars again for another month through cases and variants and this and that and the other. And I think this is what you will see reflexively, consistently as we move ahead, is that social society as we knew it, or basically, to be cynical about it, anything that young people do who haven't got the vaccine yet will be arbitrarily shut down on a whim. Or maybe if you disagree with that, will be shut down for a real and just reason. One or the other, I suppose. I think by now we clearly understand that most of these decisions are the better to be safe than sorry, and over caution means that nobody can ever be accused, or no one ever appropriates any personal risk or jeopardy. Certainly not the political class, that's for sure, who are able to ride out most of these things in a different way than the rest of us. But it will certainly seem that clubs, bars, as I said, social society, music, art, culture, this kind of stuff would appear to be completely dispensable when it comes to the first reflexive thing to shut down. And certainly in Ireland, we haven't even reached the stage where they are reopening yet. So what does the gig announcement mean to me? Well, I suppose, like I said before, I'm not really somebody who gets that excited about these things until I'm actually sitting on the plane on the way over. You see a poster for a gig in Chile or in Sao Paulo or Mexico or Moscow or whatever, and you go, OK, I'll believe that when I'm sitting on the plane on the way over, when all members are present and correct and everything is on its way. I don't get excited or look forward to these things because I suppose in the early formative years of the band, before we really started going on tour, so many things were arranged that just fell through. And when you're younger, you tend to, of course, be more excited, more exhilarated by these things. And the fact that tour after festival was just cancelled sort of gave you a thick skin about these things, and you decided, well, from now on, maybe looking forward, I'm not going to put all my, shall we say, emotional eggs in one basket, if you had them to begin with, and I'm not going to, you know, wind myself looking forward to this trip because it could quite easily be cancelled. Now, of course, the reasons why something might be cancelled now as opposed to back then are very different. So What are the chances of us actually playing there? I think, to be honest, probably the way London is going ahead. Now, of course, in Ireland, we've opened indoor dining, etc., etc. Sorry to be boring you talking about these things once more. This was a sort of vampire accent there. But you can be sure the media for the next week or two will be full of scare stories about rising cases from reopening and this and that and the other, as we can see that mostly most mainstream media reporting is utterly duplicitous with the government and state narrative when it comes to adhering to social restrictions and rules. But lockdown is over, Alan. Surely it is, somebody said to me the other day. And you may disagree with this principle, but to me, no, it's not. Originally, we were given a level 1 to 5 reading of lockdown, 5 the most strict and 1 the most relaxed, so to speak. Wrong word, but yes. And the fact that we were never in 1, but quietly, those discussions of 1 to 5 just eased and nobody talked about them anymore, because I think the idea was, well, if we create a society that literally is in level 2 and then stop talking about it, people just accept it as normal. And so, yes, we are still in lockdown. While there are any rules and restrictions, then yes, that is a form, for me, of lockdown. And saying it isn't allows the agents of, shall we say, disaster capitalism or profit a free pass by not saying so. So my motives for saying so are because that it allows too many people off the hook, so to speak, when it comes to the reasons and why they profit from keeping people within these places. So for me, yes, we are still, of course, in lockdown, because you do not have ultimate freedom of movement. Talking to you from a rainy, grey, percentage-wise empty, derelict city where few people venture into to socialise anymore, that there are no gigs, culture, art, comedy, whatever else. To me, that still is a form of lockdown. Now, it might not be the same lockdown, but I understand, like I said, this comes back to the glass half empty, half full view of society. Anyway, so I suppose it is in some way a movement in the right direction. And many people who listen to the podcast have been sending me little clips of attempted gigs that are happening where people are sitting outside. Sometimes they're non-restricted. We all saw the download pilot, which appeared to be 30 or 40,000 people who just had a test, went in. And I haven't heard any news of track and trace numbers, or was it a super spreader event? Of course. The clever, or shall we say, the logical thing to do for example, our government here would be to go, oh, you did a thing? What was the result? Oh, that was the result. Oh, maybe we can apply that logic to us also doing a thing. But of course, that's not quite how it works, because there's too much middle management bureaucracy involved. As Hannah Arendt call it, the banality of evil may be the application of the civil service to your social freedom and liberty, so to speak. Sorry, Hannah, for taking your name in vain. And what do we really mean by the banality of evil in that sense? What we mean is that bureaucracy has to grease the wheels of every great atrocity in humanity generally. There has to be somebody filing the paperwork going, we must make the trains run on time, don't you know? That kind of thing represents, I suppose, the banality of bureaucratic evil, Hannah. So, what does this mean for people who are going to enter, who are going to try and go to this gig? Well, I think realistically what it means is that maybe in the UK, you are going to have an antigen or a PCR test. The UK is not yet making noises like it's like, for example, we are over here, that we are looking at creating some form of two-tier society, i.e. the vaccinated are allowed inside and the unvaccinated are not. That said, I look in the media today and it seems that Boris Johnson is suggesting the very exact thing come the end of September, that people are going to have to require everything like that to enter museums and venues and nightclubs, etc. So, who knows? Which is kind of where France was going, or where Macron announced the other day that they were looking at sort of creating this sort of two-tier society. And it is very, very worrying that that is the sort of language. I mean, I haven't really understood yet whether they really were implying that the vaccinated can vote or not. But, and don't quote me in bad faith there, as many people wish to do often. I said I don't quite understand the implications. So therefore, there is still a question to be asked, right? The idea that we're going to create some form of, and I'll use the word, even some people might not like it because they would consider it too hyperbolic, but the idea that we may create some form of apartheid society, yes, I know, it's a rather extreme word, is possibly on the cards, whereby tests of various sorts or herd immunity or whatever these other things you have to consider are not taken into account anymore, and merely you need this passport to get into everything. Looks kind of on the cards, and certainly in Ireland it looks like that is what they are going to create. Now the UK for now looks like it's going in a different direction, although the English government has said that by the end of September they are looking at doing something like that. So I think realistically next year we are going to have to consider the fact that you are going to need this electronic biometric passport, which I talked about in episode one of this exhausting, tiresome podcast, and said this is what is going to be created. And so we are essentially creating a sort of two-tier society, potentially. And I've been reading that the take-up of the vaccine amongst, for example, ethnic communities is very low. And so is that not somehow going to be framed as racist? And how will it not be defined as racist? Maybe it's against your religion. Maybe you're a young woman who is looking to get pregnant. I don't know. Lots of questions. But seeing as asking any questions has you framed as being an anti this or anti that or anti the other. But let me just qualify, as I have often said, is that skepticism is the only rational perspective on everything, at least in my opinion. Not cynicism, but skepticism, at least asking the questions. But unfortunately, it seems that most things are being framed in a sense that asking a question means you are this. There seems to be only a binary choice given to people, a moral, cultural, social, ethically binary choice, good or evil. Which are you? Are you a good person or are you an evil person? Well, maybe you don't believe either in the structures of these simple binary concepts of good and evil. And maybe the truth is, you are in the middle. You are nuanced. Again, sometimes people accuse me of fence-sitting. Fence-sitting. What exactly does that mean? You sit on the fence. Well, you know what? I've tried to explain this in a previous podcast. And that is, if we consider the political system in a simple way, I call it like the nine-number system. 1 to 9. 1 is the far, far left. 9 is the far, far right. Your average person is 4, 5, 6. Or 3, 4, 5. They aren't really 1 or 9. But if the 1s call the 5s the 9, they destroy the middle ground, the 5s, and vice versa. It's a rather simplistic system, I suppose, but I think illustrates the concept pretty well, which is that if you consider yourself politically homeless, which maybe I do, I have nuanced views as a normal person does have. And I understand that in the binary choices of black and white online argument, being nuanced is not what something that anybody wants to hear. They also don't want to hear moderate man says reasonable thing, as that just doesn't generate any clicks. And it's not a sexy answer that appeals to either side. So if you try and hold the line in the middle, it isn't really fence sitting to me. What other people call fence sitting is trying to apply logic. Fence sitting is understanding that there are multiple narratives all playing out at once. There are multiple reasons why things happen. There are many agents of power, of irrational agents. If you take any pivotal moment in history and you say, well, what happened? Why did that happen? Did World War I start exactly because of Gabriella Princip pulling that trigger and killing Archduke Ferdinand in the streets of Sarajevo? Is that exactly why the First World War started? It isn't. Let's be honest. There were many other reasons why. Pick another moment. Let's say, you know, you have Sunday Bloody Sunday in Derry. Did the IRA's military campaign in the north of Ireland start right after that moment? Or do we have to go back through history and look at all the points of light that brought us to that moment? Well, I think you do. And I understand that that's frustrating and difficult, because what it means is that There has to be many, many debates. And unfortunately, they often get mired down in the grey area. And that is where I think most things reside. So if the fence is the grey area, then I sit on the fence because I don't wish to be claimed for either side. And I understand that for a lot of people that they want to crusade, they want to answers, they want justice, they want all of these ephemeral things sometimes that are quite complicated because there are many different reasons as to why all of those things happen. And that is why, you know, sometimes people say to me, "Oh, you're sitting on the fence," or they say, "Oh, you're dog whistling, because you're not saying what you really mean." And well, A, who is it for anyone else to assume that? And B, also the fact that everyone also always assumes that they almost always assume the bad faith argument of those they disagree with, I think is an intellectual dishonesty, because what this really means is that you're always defined by the most outlying argument to prove someone else's point, which is, as I said, an intellectual dishonesty. If you have a question about something, then somebody applies the most extreme definition to that. If you say, I have a question about the motives of Big Pharma, for example. Didn't they cause the opioid crisis? You must be an anti-vaxxer. No, I didn't say that. I said I had a question about the motives of Big Pharma. Only yesterday, I simply posted a link to, well, it was really just a picture of, which was from Reuters, which merely stated Pfizer's profit margin was at $33.5 billion for the last year and a half or so. And just placing that on my Instagram, just a picture, all it was an observation of a financial dividend by a company that has a lot to gain from the situation that we're in. I mean, that is an inarguable position. But the comments underneath were just people tearing strips off each other. Anti-vaxxer this. Are you defending capitalism? Are you against capitalism? Oh, right. So they should do it for free, etc., etc. And it just struck me like, wow, you can't even just make an observation, not even say anything about it. Just place a picture which simply states, here is a company. This is the profit margin they have made. Think about that in any way you wish. No, as I said, people took the observation merely in either the worst faith of either way possible. People somehow on one side assuming, oh, this is part of some 5G anti-vax thing. Look at this alt-right comment, blah, 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 blah. Really? An observation about Big Pharma's financial dividend represents that to you? And on the other side, oh, I still see you have some bootleggers in your following you on Instagram. Surely they must have all been gotten rid of, blah, 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 blah. People fighting, arguing. Not even taking a moment to think and just digest the number, which is all that I really meant. And it really just encapsulated the way things are right now in that just an observation of a number, which is a profit margin, is so partisan. There's nothing you can say. And it really just brought home to me the reason why we are in the situation that we're in that the divide and conquer strategy employed by, let's call it, state tech pharma, the technocracy, if you want to call it, has been so perfectly played. I'm not sure that we have a card to play left at the table. I'm not sure we have a hand left to play because the divide and conquer has been so perfectly manipulated and formed over the last 20 months that even just, as I said, an observation of a number can cause chaos, consternation, recuperation, and just vengefully angry comments. And I think that that's really speaks volumes, which until recently, most reasonable people did. But there you go. You're always, for the purposes of those who wished to tar you all with the same brush, they will attempt to always define you by the most extreme outlying argument. And like I said, this just destroys the middle ground. It destroys compromise. It destroys debate. But of course, debate isn't really what it's about. It's only usually about winning. But of course, if you don't seek to reach compromise, you only seek to win. Well, then you might as well paint the people that you think you disagree with in the worst possible light. As some people have said to me, shouldn't I stay in my lane? Does it do you any good to talk about politics in your podcast? Well, I don't know. I personally don't think that I actually have much of a choice but doing that. And if anybody has read any of my interviews or understands what Primordial has sung about for 20 or 25 years, then yes, what was I going to do? Go and become, go and restore furniture for the last 19 months and stay quiet? You know, it maybe might have done my mental health more of a favor, but that's not what I chose to do. So I chose to do the podcast. Now, if you decide that you dislike a sentence I say, so therefore that discounts all of the music I've made for the last 30 years, I would say the problem lies with how you interpret these things. I don't wish to agree with every artist I like. I don't wish to agree with every musician, every writer I like. That's just not how the world works. If you only wish to find things that fit into your worldview, well, then a pretty dull and boring world it will be. And also when you dig down, you'll find that even the people you campaign and crusade for, you probably aren't going to like everything that they think. It's a very reductive view of the world. But do I do myself favors by discussing some of these things? Yes and no. Some of you sent me some links to some arbitrary list that somebody made accusing the band of this, that and the other. And I'm not going to give it oxygen. But it did make me think about the idea that should we address our critics? And the answer, I think, is no, because we're not really addressing our critics, because this is not really critical. If the playing field was even and somebody, you know, I suppose in a way was to accuse you of something and say, hey, I read this thing and here's the exact quote. What do you mean by that? And you might say, well, you know, that's a quote from when I was 19. I'm now 45 years old. We change as human beings. Are you willing to accept the fact that some of us grow up? Yes or no? But you realize that that's not really what it's about. It's not really about debate. It's not really, you know, Gore Vidal versus Buckley or whatever you want to say. It's about winning. It's a competition. It's about bringing people down. It's about canceling them. It's about all those kind of things. It's about the idea that there is no due process. And one of the most, I think, incredulous and ridiculous things is the idea of being, let's say, politically adjacent, which basically means we think that you're friends with somebody we think we disagree with, which, of course, is a sort of incredible intellectual dishonesty, because you will find that most people, most bands, most musicians have played on a stage with somebody from somewhere that you probably disagree with. So applying the same logic to everybody means nothing happens, which I find quite fascinating, because I've been thinking about this quite a lot recently. Are the people who want to cancel shows, are they happy now that there are no shows? Surely this suits them. If you support cancel culture, surely the idea that there is no social society, this should please you, because all the people that you dislike are not able to speak. Sure enough, they've had to all be moved online, but it means they're not on your college campus. They're not in your local venue. But I have a feeling this doesn't make people who support cancel culture happy, because they've got fuck all to do. They're a bit idle now. Oh, well, you mean I can't make that sign and go down and stand in the street and wave and this and that and the other? Or we can't, we can't harass this person or that person? Or it strikes me that part of it all is the action, the movement. It's taking part in something that you think brings action or justice. And I was thinking about it the other day, seeing as, let's say lockdown moved in perpetuity now onwards, which it may do, but it gets stricter and there just literally is no social society. So you don't have any more gigs to try and be cancelled, because they all just get shut down. Is that what people want? Would that make people happy? I think it wouldn't, because then you realize that, oh, all the bands I like can't play either. In fact, nothing can happen. And then you realize, is the justification for your existence really based on opposing things? I exist because here's what I've set myself up to oppose. Does that make sense? Maybe it does, because you're validating your own existence. And if you were to take away all the things that you opposed and just go, okay, you have a free run now, do something entirely different and positive, I don't think that many people would really want to do that. But certainly the creation of some form of two-tier society should ring many, many, many alarm bells. I mean, even you may notice that dating apps, for example, Tinder in Ireland is now going to join with our health services to allow people to show whether they're vaccinated or not. which I think somehow sets an incredibly dark precedent, as if the state didn't control people's dating or even casual sex habits more than usual because they've eliminated social society and people's chances of meeting, which, let's be clear about this, are less percentage-wise than they were when there was an open and free society. Sure, of course, some people are still meeting. And yes, anecdotally, you might know some people who have had a kid or something, but that's not what I'm talking about. Statistically, it is inarguable that if you take away the platform, the actual real-life platform, situations with which people are able to meet because you've got them scared into their bubbles, etc., then yes, the knock-on effect will be that there is less people meeting, having relationships, etc., which knocks on to how many people will have children, so to speak. Am I being a bit too dark in thinking that all of these things, i.e. the segregation of people through dating platforms, which are one of the few things left that people are able to maybe meet with each other, has an incredibly dark precedent? Because what you're doing is allowing an element of the state, i.e. the health and service executive, to meddle in your ability to meet somebody. It seems to me to be an incredible example of how short-termist almost everything that's happened in the last 19 months is, that people are making decisions on the fly about how society should be that could have disastrous implications in a couple of years that I'm not sure they're thinking about. Like I said, I don't really believe in some huge Machiavellian umbrella plot, because the simple fact is that the amount of working parts that would take all moving in the right in one direction, I think, are incorrect. That's just cannot happen. It's not mathematically possible. But perhaps they're steering the ship in a certain direction. This could very well be true. They have their hands on the tiller at any one time. But we're getting into dangerous territory now, because you see across the United States, they're starting to, at least by the one video I saw, have volunteers knocking door to door asking about the process. And like I said, some people are annoyed that I use the word apartheid. And that's, to be honest, one of the reasons why I use the word, because it stimulates conversation and irritates people who think that everything is benign, because clearly everything is not benign. And to think things are just, Asher, look at it, it'll be grand. This is obviously not how it will turn out, because that's not how any pivotal moment in history ever turned out for everyone. So you're doing yourself an intellectual disservice if you're unwilling to at least contemplate some of the grey area, or even some of the area inhabited by people you dislike. If you're caught up in the idea that you've always got to protest the protester, then you will never get to the core of maybe what might be in their argument. As they say, even a stopped clock is right twice a day. You know, the people you think you fundamentally disagree with might have some points, and reaching some form of nuanced consensus is probably more worthwhile to society, at least to hear them out. But it sets a very dangerous precedent throughout history, if we look back at any moment in time whereby we think, oh, you know what, segregating people by their health status could be really beneficial. How far are people willing to go for that? Imagine in the 1980s if people had said, well, you have AIDS, I think you're going to have to wear some kind of a sticker on your clothes, or maybe could you wear a green hat or something all of the time, etc., etc. One thing that's very clear about the situation that we're in is that the irrationality of short-termism and knee-jerk reactions to decisions just seem to be happening everywhere. And in countries which do not have, let's say, countries that have a democratic tradition, such as Ireland, giving 30 new rules to, let's call them the institutions of authority which run this state, just giving them arbitrary new rules because you think that's a good idea, looking at the summer months of controlling young people. Those rules stay on the statute books, as they don't have sunset clauses. What happens if a real tyrant comes along in 3 or 4 or 5 or 8 or 10 or 20 years and goes, oh, see all those new rules? I think a police state would be a good idea. And to anybody who thinks that those kind of things, sure, that can't happen here, Alan, take a look at history and understand that every country has had moments where they flirted with dictatorship, with tyranny. It could be religious, it could be autocratic, or it could be what's coming in the future, a form of technocratic tyranny. I mean, look how we're invited to take part in the joy of watching the Bezos-Branson space race. Here are billionaires who have made money from exploiting working class people working in their factories, from tax breaks across the board, also from funding given to you from your taxes, who are racing to space. And you are being invited by the mainstream media to somehow take part in this as a distraction from the situation that you're in, to find joy in the fact that Jeff Bezos is going into space. Isn't this insane that you're being invited to take part in a billionaire's boys club? The space race used to be something that was between states. Whether it was a Cold War proxy ideology that had pitted the Soviet Union against the United States, but this was still two states moving against each other. But it shows you the power of tech, in a sense that tech is more powerful in many senses than most states. You've seen this throughout the last 19 months and prior to this, in the fact that big tech has taken it upon itself to try and curate the debate. Now, some may say curate, I would say censor. But certainly they've sought to take out opposing viewpoints to some of these narratives. So you've got state, big tech, big pharma, and all of these institutions, it would seem, with the mainstream media working in tandem together to present one narrative to the people. And that is so worrying. I mean, even in our own state last week, there was a protest here in Dublin, which had many, many, many more than the 1,500 people reported by our mainstream news broadcasters. Why do they underreport these things? I think what's happened is that whether it's a form of self-censorship or the sense that I still think the hangover of Trump derangement syndrome is within people's memories so strong, in the sense that I can tell that whoever the journalist is who's reporting on this thinks, I have to underreport this, or else I'm giving credence to people who I've decided that I'm diametrically opposed to. So it's not really journalism, it's activism in that sense. And we see posters all around our city going, which are, you know, positive activism. No, I don't know what they're about. It just says moral activism. It's just sort of strange, summary posters inspiring people to activism. Now, most people don't notice these things. But I do. And so is that the reason why the nation state itself seems so powerless in the face of big tech? And especially in, I suppose, in trying to get the message across to younger people. I often think about this in the sense that one of the reasons why so many young people, I think, you know, young people feel so disconnected from the things that somebody like I would feel we are losing is because the online world, the idea of being an online citizen means you have less connection to the real world examples of your nation state. So you think, well, who cares if we lose them? Who cares if we lose the public space? Who cares if we lose the genuine real life space where people meet? Because the online world is enough. Maybe I'm being overly simplistic. So let me try and explain a little bit more what I mean by that. What I mean by that, in a sense, is that we're invited to be a citizen of nowhere. The global citizen is essentially a citizen of no specific place other than the online marketplace. So if you're a citizen of nowhere, how can you identify with being a citizen of somewhere? As in the traditional identification with the nation, state, city, all of those things that the history that defines where you are actually from. If you've been uprooted from that, as in, I suppose, that digital history replacing actual history, then you have no connection to those things. So those things become, in essence, easier to take. And I think that's part of what we're witnessing now. But that is paradoxically the reason why the state finds them easy to control, because they have no connection to the things that are being taken. At least that's how I am considering it, musing over it. hypothesizing, bullshitting, someone might say. But the idea, when you try and explain to somebody the reasons why, you know, culture, heritage, tradition, whatever you want to say, is important, for somebody who has little or no connection to those, they don't really see the reasons why. Well, why are you so worried about these things being torn down? Because they're old world, they're legacy systems, they don't really mean anything anymore. But it's certainly clear that this coming technocracy may be more powerful than your local government, or at least your broader government. You might be able to make changes within your local government. So one could say that the implementation of this technocratic state has always been on the cards. I'm a bit tired of people saying to me, hey man, were we ever free? Well, you know what? We were freer, and that's important. What you're taking is the public spaces from people. And these public spaces were used, I suppose, or you could say they were a method of resistance to the technocratic future, because people are people. They're human. They have human desires. They wish to meet. They wish to go out and travel. They wish to go and gather and congregate and protest and see music and go to festivals. But if you give the technocratic state enough time to implement a state of fear within people, you can move the percentages. You can move the dial. And like I said, people may find it funny, but the idea that dating sites are going to require your medical status, maybe to take part, maybe you're going to have to upload them for other people to view, is a very dark fundament. Because if, for example, lockdown continues and people are still forced to meet in an ever, the avenues through which people are able to meet, to form relationships, to form human relationships, become slimmer and slimmer and slimmer until they're literally controlled by an unanswerable, unelected health and safety, I'm not going to say elite, but board. But it's the short-termism of what seem like, short-term solutions to social problems that can have vast implications as we move forward. Removing people's ability to meet, to be human. But like I said, some people will find it silly that I'm talking about this kind of thing. But having further control by the state over your sex life will impact upon birth rates, all of those kind of things. Now, you can draw your own conclusion from that implication. Or just call me crazy if you want, or just call me plain wrong, or just plain disagree if you want. But every action has a reaction, and it just might take a little while to see them or figure them out. But certainly, that's true. So let's bring this back. Let's bring this back to the gig, the music, all that kind of stuff. Could it be that gigs and festivals moving forward are going to require you to produce your papers, a Papers Please Society, to be able to take part in social society? And this is entirely, when this thing started, not what politicians said. I mean, you're going to have to go back over some of their quotes and saying that they would, Boris Johnson said he'd rather eat a vaccine passport if it was attempted to be brought in. What, quite whatever that meant, I don't know, but it looks like he's going to have to eat it. And like I said, that element of social society, whether it's music, whether it's art, theatre, comedy, culture, all those kind of things, they seem to be the first thing that's sacrificed every time there's a remote scare, because let's be honest, they're seen as a young person's thing, a young person's game, so therefore dispensable, because it's not young people who are making these decisions. And like I said, I do wonder how with some young people this resonates with them, as because the idea of going to a gig is something that maybe our generation, let's say 25 to 50, they're the kind of people who are going to miss this. So I don't know. What an all over the place ramble. I had too much to say in that podcast, all sorts of different things. There's going to be the next few are just going to be a bit about music, about, you know, some people have been asking me questions about this, that and the other. Anyway, my friends, the idea, am I my brother's keeper? The answer is no. It's something I might come back to another podcast. All right. Episode 67 is an all over the place kind of ramble about this and that. But wasn't it about time? Go over to my YouTube channel, subscribe, share, take a look, all those kind of things. If you like the podcast, share it with somebody. Subscribe. You can go to my Patreon where I do other bonus stuff, all sorts of other podcasts, different discussions, this kind of thing, and you can support the show. And until then, don't take me that seriously. Planet Satan over and out. This is Alan Averill.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.